It's the Dort Podcast. It's the Dort Podcast.
Rich Keith.
It's the Dort Podcast.
Hashtag.
It's the Hashtag Dort Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Hashtag Dork. Thrilled to have you. It is Shark Week, so why wouldn't we have Brian Sharkey to lead things off? I'm once again your host, Rich Keefe. Shark, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great.
What an unbelievable final episode of Game of Thrones. This podcast will be about season 6 in its entirety of Game of Thrones, so obviously spoilers. Go back and watch it if you haven't seen it just yet. But before we get into Game of Thrones, it is This Week in Hashtag Dork. That's how we've been kicking things off here the last handful of episodes, and that is brought to you by the fine folks over at Mac and Goo. So, Shark, this is the little plug for Mac and Goo. So let me know if you were, let's just say you're a regular dude and you heard this, would this entice you to listen to Mac and Goo? So ready, I got a little pitch for you.
Oh, nice.
Hey, common man, looking for a killer, seriously stellar hour of programming? Look no further, Rockstar. Mac and Goo will strike all major chords by quickly giving away high-quality, powerful, sexy secrets that will put you into clever, dangerous excitement. Be stunned by the guarantee of phenomenal, significant, next-level, latest, free, fresh brilliance. Incredibly, Mac and Goo will conquer every fantastical thought in your mind with creative ridiculousness. Mac and Goo. Find them on iTunes or go to macandgoo.com and get all the audio you can eat. Rockstar. That's it. What do you think?
My mind is blown.
Yeah, you're
impressive.
In. Yeah. And again, as I think I've mentioned before, I can highly recommend at least 3 of the episodes in which I was a guest on. So once you're done listening to Hashtag Dork, go on over to Mac and Goo and check those guys out. So
nice.
This Week in Dork, Shark, I don't know how many of these shows you've been keeping up with, but 3 of my favorite shows outside of Game of Thrones are Preacher, Outcast, and Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley just came to an end, like Game of Thrones. I thought it was a pretty good season. I always like to see where they go with it because it's an interesting show, and then it's obviously sprinkled in with a lot of good comedy.
I haven't dabbled in Silicon Valley, although I would like to.
Oh, no kidding. I thought you watched it. I thought, oh, okay. No, never mind.
But I have dabbled in Preacher.
What do you think?
I am up on Preacher. So I love it. So I sort of almost the reverse of you with Game of Thrones. I have not read the books at all or
right.
the graphic novels, and I'm just coming into it fresh. And I love it. I love Jesse. I love the vampire whose name I'm blanking on.
Cassidy.
Cassidy. Thank you.
Yep.
I feel like just the directing and how it's shot is very well done. It's just a very cool world and I think it's a great start to the series.
Yeah, it has been pretty good. And I think they're through 5 episodes to this point, and I thought that the most recent episode was better than the one prior to that. Because I didn't know, because I loved the start, and then it kind of was a little bit of a lull, and then it was getting good again. So I like that. And then also Outcast. I don't know how many people are watching it. It's on Cinemax. It's a comic book that I've not read. Robert Kirkman, the same guy who did The Walking Dead, wrote Outcast, and it's more of a horror show, I guess. Like, it's exorcism type of stuff. It's not super scary. Like, if you're scared easily, like I am, it's not like that, but it's interesting. And what a who's who for casting. Like, listen to this. They have Jason Street from Friday Night Lights has been in an episode.
Yes.
They have Roy from The Office is like a main character.
Okay.
The kid from Almost Famous, remember the kid who was like, I just want to like write about music. I love music. Like,
yeah.
He's like the main character. He's like a beard now, so he's older. And then remember Carchetti's like main advisor in The Wire?
Oh, yeah.
He's in it too. So it's like every time you watch, I'm like, this guy? Like this guy? So it's like they throw them all together. But anyway, that's a decent show. As for movies, Shark, the top 5 at the box office this week. I'm going to throw the 5 movies out there, and then let me know either A, if there's any you have seen, and then B, any of these that you want to see.
Yes.
All right, so number 1, once again, was Finding Dory. That's like your Nemo knockoff. Independence Day Resurgence made $41 million. That was second. Central Intelligence finished 3rd. That's the Kevin Hart Rock movie. Blake Lively's The Shallows was 4th. And then the horror movie, The Conjuring 2, was 5th.
Oof. Let's see. The Conjuring, I would like to see.
Yes.
I'd like to see it in the safety of my own home.
So makes sense.
Nice and secure.
Yep.
The first one was, like, excellent, I thought.
It
so
was.
Well done. And it's not even, like, a gory horror movie. It's just suspenseful.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's great. The Shallows, I will not be seeing, so I would like to swim in the ocean again.
Fair enough.
Let's see. The Rock and Kevin Hart. That's take it or leave it. I certainly wouldn't see it in theaters.
No.
Maybe if it's on HBO.
Yeah, it feels like a good Sunday afternoon, like you're kind of hungover movie. Yeah. Independence Day?
Independence Day is the one I'm highest on there. I would definitely like to see that in theaters. I have not seen it. For all the listeners, I have small kids, so I don't get out to the theaters too often. And then Dory, I unfortunately will probably end up seeing that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's only a matter of time, right? You're going to be seeing all those movies pretty soon.
Right. And from the trailers, it looks like it's just a complete knockoff of
Nemo.
Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Like all the same stuff.
Yeah, they didn't even like tweak the title. They literally just kept it Finding, and they were like, let's just slap Dory in there.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Reversal. Silly.
Well, it's made $286.3 million in 2 weeks, so I guess
can't argue with that.
Yeah, they're doing something right. Yeah, I'm with you. The Conjuring and The Shallows, I really want to see. I don't know if they'll see them in the theater though. But Independence Day, I don't know. I've heard kind of mixed things. Like, I guess it probably depends on how much you like the first Independence Day.
Yeah, I would probably see it more out of nostalgia sake than going into it with high expectations. Like,
that's fair.
I don't expect much, but I'd like to see the little gang back together, although I know Will Smith is in that.
No, that's true.
It's okay.
Now,
a good decision on his part.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping Suicide Squad, which he's in, is going to be, like, the movie of the second half of the summer. So, fingers crossed on that. The last bit of hashtag dork news... Overwatch players for PS4 and Xbox One, they announced that they're going to be changing Torbjorn. He's the little guy shark. He looks like Gimli, and he sets up like turrets. And these turrets are fucking unstoppable. Like there is a way to beat them, but they're just so hard. Like he hammers this turret, and then it has a crazy long range, and it takes away so much damage, and it seeks you out. Like, he doesn't need to, like, point it at you. He just sets it up, and then the thing, like, senses you and shoots you.
Cool.
And so I guess the game's creators and all these guys that are working on it are like, all right, that is a bit unfair. So starting, I think, next month when they release the next update, that they're going to take away 30% of how much damage he causes. So I was like, thank God. I don't use that guy anyway, so I was like... Get rid of this guy. So hopefully there'll be less people using Torbjorn is really the hope there.
Can you think of other video games that have had like overpowering like unfair characters?
Oh my God. That we could do a whole episode on that probably.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
That's really, really good. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, Mike Tyson, I've never beaten. I would say he is pretty goddamn unstoppable.
I think that might be the point. But
no, that probably
the
is.
The one that came to mind when you were talking was Tecmo Super Bowl. There's some characters, you know, like Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, people who really know Tecmo. Like, there's some guys who are on the bench who are weirdly, like, super powered up. And I guess it had to do with... when they're making it, you know, it was Nintendo and everyone's in Japan. They didn't really know anything about football players. And somehow they looked at stats or something and decided a couple of these guys on the bench should be super fast. So
if
you see people making weird substitutions, look out.
Oh, that was really funny. I didn't know that. Yeah, I'm trying to think some of the other stuff that was – well, I mean, then there were, like, glitches in games. Like, so those – like, Torbjorn's a little bit different because I always think of when we would play Bulls versus Blazers and D. Brown would shoot like that bar on the parquet right inside of half court and would just knock everything down.
Yeah,
I was like,
banking 40-footers.
Yeah, like that maybe you should take out of the game. But you know what, Shark, I think you just gave us a great idea for a upcoming episode.
Yeah,
what you just did there.
We'll come back to that circle round.
All right, so this episode is going to be season 6 of Game of Thrones. We are going to focus a lot on the finale and the second half. Shark and I did an episode, I forget which number it was, but you can check out the archives, where it was the halfway point of Game of Thrones. So it was right after the Hodor stuff, and I think it was the first 5 episodes, right? And so first half, a lot more of analysis on that stuff. You can go back and check that one. We'll probably get to some of that stuff here. But I guess, Shark, as someone, you have read all of the books. I have not read any of the books.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously knew that it was taken from that source material for all those seasons, particularly season one. Would you say, knowing that this, they kind of had to start to do their own thing, was it better? Was it worse? Was it the same? Like, could you tell that they were no longer with the books in your mind? What was, like, your general impressions of that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know if it had to do with them going off book. I think just for the nature of the medium, you have to change things up. One thing I think is really putting some pressure on the show is trying to wrap things up while having like 40 characters.
Yes.
So there were episodes where I was like, well, what do you do? Why are you including Dorn? Like, the Dorn storyline is kind of no good. Sam is boring to me. I don't like Sam. Yeah. Same with the Ironborn. For some of that, I was kind of like, oh, okay, yeah. Let's get past them. Let's get to the meat. And I think mostly they did that, but I did find myself getting impatient at times with some of those more minor storylines. But it seems like they're going to wrap those all kind of all up into sort of a nice little package for next season. So that was, I think more of it had to do with winding down the story and sort of getting ready to end it than it had to do with kind of going off book.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, because you do feel like you're like, there are so many characters, and there's like a bunch of them that are either like on their own or in like a group of two, and you're like, well, you got to get them in here, and it's like a completely different location. And it's hard to tie them in and, you know, with the other characters. So it was at times, like, the word I've been using for it is sort of disjointed. Mm-hmm. Like, in seasons past, everything kind of connected. Like, you're like, all right, we're here, now we're over here, but there's, like, a direct relationship between two characters. Or, like, you know, Jon Snow had just left the North and now he's here, and, you know, what does he know, what doesn't he know, and all that stuff seemed to make it was a little bit more cohesive. And, like, Sam's a good example. You mentioned him because I really enjoyed the finale, and then it's like, here's Sam in a library, and you're like, okay, like, let's do we need to spend 6 minutes or whatever it was with Sam? I don't know, I'm interested in the character to a certain degree, but maybe I'm not, because at the same time I'm saying I don't think he needs really any screen time.
Do you know what's weird is, like, I'll find myself getting impatient with scenes that don't really move the plot along.
Yes.
Along.
Yep.
So, like, the one, maybe it was two episodes ago, where Tyrion is telling jokes with Missandei and Grey Worm there.
Yeah.
And
terrible jokes.
You're just kind of like, well, that was kind of a waste of 5 minutes. Like, we only have so much showtime. Like, let's get going.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I find myself, when I watch The Wire, one of the things I love about The Wire is it does kind of go slow, and it has so much character development. And I don't exactly know why it annoys me with Game of Thrones, and it's something I sort of love about The Wire. It's like, oh, that was just a great character scene that didn't have anything to do with the plot. Maybe that's a question for another day. But
yeah, no, it's interesting. I think certainly in the first season of The Wire, anyway, you're building a bigger piece of the, you know, you're putting pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah.
Whereas in Game of Thrones, we've heard now for 60 episodes how winter is coming, and now you get to a point you're like, all right, maybe less jokes. Like, I feel like I kind of know Tyrion now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even some of the other newer characters, you kind of know, and you're like, all right, is somebody getting, like, who's gonna, you know, be on the throne when this is all said and done? And there's only, what, 13 episodes left, I believe. I don't know if they've finalized that officially. But it's going to be two seasons, but they're going to be shorter seasons.
Right.
So, I mean, they have basically just over a normal season remaining. And so, but you can sort of see that being the case. Like, things are going to come to an end here. Like, all these sides that were all fighting kind of individually are all either teaming up, or, you know, people are obviously dying off and like crazy. So, I say it's going to be tough to look at the entire season, because that's, what, 10 hours worth of programming. There's a lot going on. Let's start with the finale. It's the thing that's the most fresh on our mind. And it did, obviously, it was the culmination of so many things going on throughout the year. But the whole wildfire thing, this was pretty amazing. They'd alluded to it before, you know, that, yeah. this was going on, or that it was potentially still there. And then they just, right before it came, did you know that was going to be, like, did you sense that was building up that way with Cersei, that this was going to be her end game?
I did not know, and I heard the theory that this is what was going to happen, and I thought, oh, that's an interesting theory. But it was one that, for whatever reason, I didn't really think was actually going to happen. I'm glad it did. I thought it was pretty cool. And I liked how they did it. So in watching the show, as soon as the mountain there sort of blocked Tommen's door, that's when I was like, oh, this is really going to happen.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was one of these moments that I think Game of Thrones is now famous for. It's kind of like blows your hair back. You're like, no, did that really just happen? And so even though they kind of alluded to it or hinted at it, it was still shocking to me, and I loved it. That was very well done.
Yeah, that was definitely shocking. I mean, the fact that you're blowing up that building, and then on top of it, you know, Marjorie's in there, Loras is in there, all those other like religious weirdos are in there. Like, that was just a ton of people. High Sparrow. I'm glad he got his comeuppance. I wish it was a little bit more personal than that, but I guess still it's the end result that you wanted. But pretty wild. It was definitely a scene that I think it did catch me a little bit by surprise. Like, I knew that they had that in, like you said, like that was a theory that was hard to ignore. Like, even if you weren't looking for Game of Thrones theories, like, everybody knew it was. But I guess my question would be, so the way they kind of set things up, and they had like the kids, or like the whispers or whatever they call those kids, like kind of dealing with everything. Why single out the Maester that way and then kill him separately? What was the point of that?
That's a really good question. And one of the interesting things is in the books, spoiler alert, it's actually Varys who kills Maester Pycelle.
Wow.
And he does it basically. So Varys kills Cersei's uncle, Uncle Kevin, and Pycelle, basically because they may be able to help her sort of stabilize things and give her good advice. And Varys wants Cersei to continue making just terrible decisions until Daenerys is ready to come over, and then people will be like, hell yes, like, we need a change, like, let's put her on the throne. And so he basically kills them because they're competent, or at least somewhat competent. Obviously it's different here. I think it probably had somewhat to do with her new man there, whose name I'm blanking on. I'm sorry.
No, I know who you're talking about. The other dude.
Yes. Sort of him sort of officially taking that spot. And I think that was probably personal for him. Pycelle was always putting him down, saying he's illegitimate, he doesn't know anything, doesn't have a chain, blah, 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 blah. So that's kind of what I think happened.
I didn't know what it was, and I was curious if, does the whole city know that, like, Cersei did that? Probably not, right? But I would think that he would know, like, how many people knew that the wildfire was down there? Like, he was one of the people that knew that. So that was one thing I was speculating.
That's a great point. That's one I hadn't considered. So he may have known about that, would have been able to rat out on her.
Yeah, so I don't know. But that whole, all the exchanges there was crazy. And then Cersei just, it's so bizarre that one of the most hateable characters you end up, like, kind of rooting for.
Yeah.
Right? Wasn't it like a weird feeling where you're like, yeah, I get her, Cersei. And then you're like, wait a minute. What am I doing here?
Yeah, you're so right. Like, for the past couple episodes, like, or throughout the season, I guess, I've seen the High Sparrow kind of as a bad guy.
Yes.
You're kind of like rooting for Cersei, like, okay, like, give him his comeuppance, like, you know, and she, there is definitely something sympathetic about her, which is one of the things that makes the show so great and the character so great. But then when she goes through it, and she, you know, she smiles, she's happy, she just blows this thing to bits.
Nuts.
And, you know, how many innocent people died? So I'm sure, you know, thousands.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And she couldn't be happier. So she's like, wow. I mean, she's really mad.
Oh, it's just,
so
yeah.
One of my big questions is, what's Jamie going to do? What's his reaction going to be?
Now there's been some talk here at the office that Jamie is going to be the one that kills Cersei.
I actually like that theory. One theory I read that I think is very clever and would feel very satisfying to me is, has to do with this, I think it's called Volankar or something, theory, and it has to do with the Valyrian word, Volankar. I think it's saying that right. And in the books, the prophecy that she gets when she's a little girl that we see sort of the flashback to.
Yeah, which was crazy.
Part of it is the witch tells her that she'll be thrown down by someone more beautiful than her and younger. And there's this word Volankar sort of is Valyrian for like little brother.
Kidding.
All of that could refer to Jaime.
Right.
Because he is younger, he may be more beautiful, and he is technically a little brother.
Wow.
So that was one that I read that I'm like, you know what, if that's the case, that'll be pretty sweet. I find that pretty satisfying.
Yeah, that's nuts, because the whole time I'm thinking is Jaime was the one that prevented the Mad King from using the wildfire.
Exactly, yeah.
And now here Cersei uses it, which also led to their son killing himself, which was another crazy scene, by the way, because I'm watching it with my wife, and he's like looking out the window, then he walks away, and then the camera just stays on the window, and I'm like, he's not gonna, I'm like, yeah, he's coming back. I'm like, there he goes. I was hoping for some sort of like crazy last words or something, you know, but he just kind of silently said that was it for him.
You know, I thought that was one of the most well done deaths in
yeah.
the show.
Yes. Memorable death.
Because you knew. I even wondered if he had continued to go against Cersei, like, would she have him killed? But I think that just doesn't fit with her character at all. Like, everything she does is for her kids.
No, she loves the kids. Like, even Joffrey,
thinks,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, she thinks it's for their kids. Like, if she was thinking and was smart about it, she would realize, you know, this isn't a good thing.
Right.
So it was kind of a perfect way for her to, in a way, kill her son.
Just insane too, like the whole turn of events. So like now we've seen, I know we're jumping around a bit, but it's tough.
Sure.
There's so much going on, but
so much.
You're thinking about like in all the episodes that we've seen, like the people who have actually sat on that throne are mm-hmm. Robert Baratheon and then Joffrey, Tommen, and Cersei. Like
wow.
What a crew! Like you know, like with all the strong and all the powerful. Like mm-hmm. we did our fighter power rankings. We've talked about like. All the people that are like geniuses and all the people that are like in these like families and everything else. And to think of that as like the leaders is wild. Also, not to get too sidetracked, but I'm all for like women power and things like that, which do you think they've gone a little overboard considering that all of the strongest characters now, all of them, like if we did a power rankings, 9 of the top 10 would probably be female.
Oh, without a doubt. I actually kind of like it. They may have gone a bit too far. There were a couple times when I was like, oh, you know, Yara and Daenerys, like, giving the good handshake. I was like, okay, this is a little maybe over the top girl power. But, it, you know, on the whole, I like it. It'll be interesting to see how they end it.
Because there can only be one queen.
Right, and how will the women do? Like, will they be any different? So, how I think it's going to end is with Daenerys on the throne, but her not being a good leader. I think, she may slip into madness, and kind of actually another wire parallel. Like, the show will end with basically everything being the same. Different players, but. Kind of everything the same.
You know what? So. You know what it might be is, I don't know because she just named Tyrion the Hand, but I wonder if basically she becomes the Mad King, and then you know the whoever her Queen's Guard is, like maybe it's another like badass chick, and then like just like Jaime, she realizes that Dany's going nuts, so then she kills her, and then so she's then kind of like now she's now you like develop a Queen Slayer. Right,
yeah.
And then so that like whoever that might be, I don't even know.
Brienne, maybe. I don't know who it would be.
But like, pick one, right? Because there's so many that are like the women are nuts in this show, and they've just been absolutely killing it.
Although I will say my favorite is Little Lady Mormont. Just the stones on her, I love it.
She crushed it. It was great to see her come back because she was huge in that episode where Jon Snow's like looking for armies, and then you're like, oh man, I hope they go back to her. And then she was a significant part in the finale.
Yeah, I was wondering if she did so well in that first episode that they penciled her in the later one, or if she's always been in the works to have her. But she's a great character.
So she's related to Jorah Mormont, right? Or is that a coincidence?
No, that's definitely correct. I believe she is his niece. So
okay, cool.
Daughter of his sister, I believe.
Everybody's connected. Like you just gotta like look hard enough, and they're all related somehow. Go ahead.
I was gonna say a fun little nugget of family connections is Brienne of Tarth is either granddaughter or great granddaughter of Sir Duncan the Tall, and that was a couple hashtag dork podcasts ago. My recommendation were these sort of short novellas about Westeros that took place like 100 years prior, and Duncan the Tall is one of the main characters. So
that's funny.
Well, fun fact.
That is really good stuff. Now, going back to the finale, we get Arya's revenge, which was amazing. And I also feel like for those that thought her storyline dragged, which I completely understand those that did, I still looked forward to it. Like, I wanted to see what was going on, but I know people were like, all right, she's blind. Now she's getting beaten all the time by this girl. Like, she's, like, you know, washing bodies. Like, let's cut to the chase. I thought it paid off big time. They did it really well. And even if you saw it coming, like, there was enough in there that maybe you didn't know exactly what and how she was going to pull it off. And, like, that was one of those times where you're like, absolutely well done and a great cat. Because you were like, all right, how is this going to – like, what's the payoff going to be is what I should say. And then, bang,
exactly
you get it.
That's the exact word I had in mind, like, the payoff of it.
Yep.
As a book reader, I actually felt like the Arya storyline went fast.
Okay.
And I think it has to kind of drag because she's not going to acquire these skills overnight. Like,
exactly.
She's not going to become, you know, this super assassin in, you know, two episodes. So I understand where people are coming from a point saying it dragged a bit, but I'm actually on the opposite side of the fence there. But it caught me by surprise. I thought we weren't going to see her until next season, and really shocked me, and I loved it. It had me jacked up.
That was great. And then she goes all Eric Cartman to Scott Tederman, and she just feeds the kids right to him. I mean, that was cold blooded. What I also liked about it was they made a point to show you how she was kind of eyeballing Jamie Lannister too.
Yeah.
And you're like, like he's just like handsome or whatever. But you're like, no, because he's also on her list.
Right.
Because she doesn't know about sort of the changes that he's made. So he's right there. Plus, I mean, what he did to Bran. So he's on her list. So he's like, all right, there's another guy I can get. But like my main goal here is Waldo Frey.
Yeah. I mean, it may have just been as simple as, you know, had Jamie, you know, gone after the serving girl, he would have been done.
Yeah.
That was very well done.
That was the other thing, too, about the Lannisters is because you ended up starting to cheer for him a little bit because especially after Tywin was gone, you're like, Tyrion's amazing, and Jaime's made this great change. So now with Cersei, two out of three of them you were really rooting for. And then with what they did to Cersei, as we were just talking about, you ended up kind of at least sympathizing with her a little bit. So even though the Lannisters were so hated, you started to change your feelings. But then this season, they're back to being side by side or shoulder to shoulder with the Freys. And it was such a reminder that you're like, no, these guys are still the worst. And like they're side by side with the Red Wedding guy. So, but then Jamie was, you know, needling him and talking about him in battle and everything else, which was great.
Yeah. I thought he did a great job putting him in his place. And Jamie has really come a long way in terms of being more than just a sword. I think he's really, from a political standpoint, I guess, like he commands as much respect as his father did. You know, he got River Run to open up their gates and, without a battle there. And, he's kind of really good at intimidating people and just owning them. And really he did that to Walder Frey. It was great.
And you got to think too, like as soon as he sees Tyrion rolling in with, the Dragon Lady and the Dothraki and everybody else, like And, you know, we already think he might want to kill Cersei anyway. Now it'll be easy for him to sort of jump ship. Or, I mean, I would think it would be, but who knows.
Yeah.
What do you think about...
Choice.
Yeah, oh, yeah. What do you think about the the Sansa, Jon Snow kind of Littlefinger dynamic right now? Like, there's a lot going on there with these three.
So much going on. This is the thing that is, you know, of all the things going on right now that kind of keeps me up at night of what the hell is going on. Like, I still don't quite know why Sansa didn't tell Jon, and I thought they were going to tell us, like, oh, here's my reason for not telling you about Littlefinger and his army, like, around the corner. And they didn't reveal that to us.
No.
I didn't pick up anything that would sort of give it away. So that was a question that I really wanted answered. I kind of tip my hat to them in some ways for not answering it. Because I don't know, it feels like something that, I don't know.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's almost fun not to have it outright revealed.
No, that's true. Like, I don't think you need every single answer just like told to you, right? Like there should be like speculation and stuff. But this was a weird one because they seem to be fine with each other. Like there was obviously some kind of not great communication going on. They're kind of finding their footing with each other. But then she's like, she did apologize. She's like, oh, I should have told you about like the army. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, what do you mean, yeah? Like, you lost, like, 1,000 guys because of that. Like, you could have just rolled in there and stomped them. And it's not like, I don't know, I don't know if they want it to be ambiguous or if they just kind of left it like, oh, this will be a cool scene, like, her riding in with Littlefinger and, like, in their army. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think there must be a reason behind it. I think we'll probably find out. I hope we eventually do, but for right now, I was kind of like, oh, you're continuing to tease me. Do you know what? This is one where I'm going to say, okay, fair play.
Yeah. Do you think you can trust Sansa?
That's a great question. I think
full of great questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. I think yes, but that is definitely in play where maybe she's not really on John's side. You know, she was never close with him growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe her time with Ramsay has kind of hardened her sort of to the extreme on the other end. And she says, you know what? I'm going to play this game for me and for no one else, not for my house, as much power for me. So I don't think that's the case, but
yeah,
it's definitely in play and they planted that seed, which I think is very cool.
I mean, would she, you know, you go back to the second to last episode and when she feeds Ramses to his own dogs and then she's like, well, she watches the whole thing and then like smiles on the way out. You're like, all right, she's cold blooded and you're like, good for her. Like, that's great. That's great revenge. But you're also like, all right, how many people even have the stomach for that? Let alone how many people would be like happy about that?
Yeah.
So I don't know. They think her head's in the right place, but you got to wonder, like she could be a little bit gone and like, not that you can't trust her, but she's going to be kind of a wild card when it, you know what I mean? Like nothing's going to intimidate her.
Yep.
Another also up there. I mean, there's more we can get into that too, but, as we get through some of the other stuff, Davos, you know, finally seeing that, like how, Stannis' daughter, what the hell's her name? Shireen was killed and he confronts Melisandre about it. And then Jon Snow's decision not to kill her, but just to sort of be like, you know, take a hike. You think that was the right move, or what do you do there?
I guess it was the right move. It kind of surprised me. I was expecting him to have kind of a Ned Stark moment, where, or almost more along the lines of Stannis, to be honest.
Yeah.
Where Stannis would say, you know, you may have saved me, but the law's the law. You got to pay.
Yeah.
So maybe had he executed her, that he would have been taking the same road Stannis would have taken.
Right.
So he did show mercy, but it surprised me a little bit. So, I mean, it leaves it open for her to come back. I don't know how.
Oh, she's coming back. She's coming back.
Yeah, she's definitely not coming back. Or she definitely is coming back.
So what was the deal? Like, so she was old. Like, they showed her, and then they never described. That was like episode one, and they've never really got into any of that after, and she was always young again the rest of the season, right?
Yeah. I think it has to do with her little magical necklace or choker thing she wears.
Yeah,
but it's a glamour, really, so it changes her appearance, obviously, but you know, I think you could tell, like, she had zero confidence later on in the season. Like,
yeah, true.
She would kind of spew the same lines of, oh, it's like what the Lord of Light has planned for you, when Jon Snow's telling her, don't bring me back if I die.
Right.
It's like, well, I have to because you're the Lord of Light. She's like, well, maybe I'm not. And then you could, like, she wasn't yeah. nearly as confident in saying it. He's like, maybe the plan is for me to come back once. She really didn't know. But I'll be interested to see if she gets her confidence back and where we see her.
The other guy that, if you've listened to any of our other Game of Thrones podcasts that we've done, who I'm absolutely fascinated by is Varys. And you shed some light on more of his role in the book that obviously I'm not familiar with. But in the show in general, this guy, he's got his hand in everything. And when he pops up with the Sand People, who we had not seen since episode 1 or 2, I feel like, of this of this season, he pops up.
Episode 1.
Yeah, maybe it was episode 1. He pops up with them. Next thing you know, they're all on the ship at the end. So what's going on with him? Is he just trying to recruit the best base possible and support a Daenerys? And do you think that – do you think that's exactly what he's doing?
I do.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure why he had to make that trip. I guess he's probably one of the people who commands that weight who would, say, convince someone like – you know, the now rulers of the Sand Snakes of Dorne,
yeah.
or the Tyrells, although they probably don't need much convincing to go with new leadership.
Right.
So the Varys thing actually was like the one thing that kind of irked me, was like how he was back on the ship at the end.
Yeah, and, like that's some speed. Maybe he went by dragons. Like that's the only quick way to go in this whole world.
Yeah, so I was like, how did that happen? And you didn't really need to see him riding the ship at the end, I thought. Like, that was like, if he wasn't there, it wouldn't have, you know, taken anything away from it. So that was like the one little thing of the finale where I was kind of like, yeah, I could have done without that.
Yeah, no, that's true. Now, so Daenerys, her army is absolutely stacked right now. So she's got...
Yeah.
Like, with the brains, like, she's got her and Tyrion and Varys, but then she also has Grey Worm and all the Unsullied. She has all the Dothraki. She now has all the Martells and the Sand Snakes. She has essentially half of the Greyjoys, because some of them stayed on with Euron, but, like, a lot of them are with...
She's got enough.
She got a lot of them.
Count.
And she has the three dragons.
Yeah.
And so they're going to Westeros, and, I mean, what... What are the what do they even have? Like, what does Cersei have? She's at the mountain, and like whatever army is left.
Yeah, it's
not much.
You know, there's not much that is gonna compare to that. You know, I know the Lannisters have a force that they put up around River Run, but like compared to what Daenerys is rolling in with, like. It is, you know, the dream team's coming together here.
It's insane. And, like, Jaime and Bronn are technically on the Lannister side right now, but they would very quickly change sides.
Oh, yeah, certainly Bronn. And I think Jaime would be fine with it, too.
Yeah, so I don't know. And then so you also have Dario Naharis, which is one of my favorite characters, he was told to stay behind, basically. How long do you think that lasts for?
You know, that was one I could kind of see him staying and saying, you know, I had a good thing. But part of me just thinks they need to weed out some characters. And it's like, well, we don't really want to just kill him off in some weird way or kind of unnecessarily, like take a random arrow to that dome or something.
Right.
Like, it was kind of a way for him to say, let's get rid of Dario and then also – who's going to be in charge of Marina? She's just going to leave it to people we don't know. So I think he kind of drew the short straw on probably how popular a character, how important a character he is. And so he's got to stay back. That's kind of how I read it.
Now we also get into one of the fan theories of the Jon Snow origin, which has been out there for a long time. You know, the old R plus L equals J. And I mean, that's all but confirmed. You know, I mean, they do some whispering and stuff so they don't just shove it in your face what's going on. But Bran goes back in time type of deal, and you kind of definitely see what's going on. Now, why do you think this was such a popular fan theory? Like, was this kind of leaked? Like, did they know this was going to be the outcome? Like, had George R.R. Martin, like, talked about this? Or was this sort of like a coincidence? Like, because on the one hand, I'm like, it is really cool, but I'm hoping that the writers of the show weren't just like, hey, here's a popular fan theory. Like, let's do this.
Yeah, you know, I think it was – I think this is, like, the fan theory of Game of Thrones, and I don't think it is actually a fan theory. I think George R. R. Martin had set it up the beginning to lead us down one way, and I think this has always been his intention. And I think one of the things that makes Game of Thrones so much fun, particularly the books, but also the show, are, like, these little nuggets they give you where if you're really paying attention – you can kind of piece things together and say, oh, do you know what? Like, there could be other motives. And it's not everything is sort of as it's laid out, sort of just from the get go. And so I think this one has always been in the works. And I think it eventually had to happen. And I think it's such a well constructed story from that standpoint that it picked up steam and people knew about it, but I think it didn't really matter. I think it's still cool.
I think it's really cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really like it. I was just wondering sort of, and it makes all the sense in the world too, like especially even if you don't read the books, you just go back to season one and sort of how they describe everything. Plus it makes more sense for the character, like what we know about Ned Stark. Like he probably wouldn't have a bastard, and it's just the whole thing.
Robert would have killed the bat. Like Robert's, you know.
Oh, for sure would have.
Like, he would have killed it, and it makes sense from sort of everything else we know about characters.
And Catelyn Stark was never in on it either, right?
No.
So that's nuts.
Yeah, so very interesting there that Ned wouldn't even tell his wife.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess that's Ned keeping his promises.
I guess so, because she did not even really like Jon Snow, and I'm sure she would have felt a lot differently about him. Had she known the truth that he's Stark and Targaryen, and it wasn't like Ned was sleeping around. So, so that's basically all I can confirm. So one thing I did think was, I mean, the scene was cool at the end up there in Winterfell with Jon and, you know, with all the different houses getting, you know, they're like, all right, we're like supporting the Starks again. I'm like, I don't care if you're a bastard. But then when they start calling him King of the North, I'm like, here we go again. I'm like, this bullshit with the King of the North. I'm like, you don't want to be the King of the North. You want to do yourself, or, you know, move down and be the king of everything. But I don't know. They're sort of left where, don't you get the sense that their war or their next war is going to be against like the White Walkers and not against the Lannisters?
Definitely. Yeah. I thought it was, I was a little surprised we didn't see anything about White Walkers. I thought there was going to be a little taste just to get us ready for next season, and they're really kind of downplaying that, which is interesting, and I'm fine with it for certainly right now, but I think it's an interesting choice on the part of the writers to kind of leave the White Walkers north of the Wall. And I guess they give you the question in the finale of how are the White Walkers going to get past the Wall? So we hear that there's this magic that keeps the undead on that side. That's why Benjen Stark can't go with Bran.
Kind of convenient.
So you're left wondering how are they going to get past the Wall? And in the books, there's references to like a mythical horn
a
magic horn that could bring down the Wall, but you never know if they actually found it or what's going on there. So
interesting. All right, so that was a lot of the finale. I'm sure there's stuff we missed. Now, here's some of the other questions I have from the season. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this. So obviously, early on, it was actually at the end of season 5, then it carries over to the beginning of season 6. The Lannister's daughter is poisoned and killed by the Sand Snakes, and like she dies on the way across. Like she knows that she's like, "Oh, Jamie, you're my dad. Like I love you, Dad." And then she gets there, and she's dead. And obviously they have to have a funeral, and they're all upset about it. But do they know that it was them that did it? And if so, like I feel like they would have sought revenge on Dorne.
Yeah, I think they would have to know.
Right.
And you're right. I guess I hadn't thought about that. They don't really play that up, or at least I can't recall them being like, "We're going after Dorne."
I thought they would have just gone back and slaughtered them. But I guess they were maybe because they were dealing with stuff like they had all like they weren't maybe in a position to do that. But I just, knowing her, like, she wanted to kill Tyrion because she thought that he killed Joffrey, even though he's like, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. So their daughter dies, and there was, like, no repercussion for it.
Yeah.
I was left kind of puzzled by that, I guess.
There's so much going on that
right.
I guess even for them, they're like, ah, we'll avenge you later.
They're like, I mean, because you didn't – I understand why they stopped going to Dorne, like, after they killed a couple of, like, the higher-ups there.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, that storyline's done for now. But I'm like, I don't know. She would be like, turn your ass back around and go kill all those chicks. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Another question that I felt was left completely unanswered, and again, maybe I'm missing something, is that Daenerys Targaryen now can ride dragons and has full control of dragons. Like, all three dragons are working in unison together. They're, like, all getting along great, whereas before, not even close. Like, she caged two of them up. The one wouldn't let her on her, like, bucked her off, dropped her in the middle of nowhere, and, like, now all of a sudden she, like, speaks dragon. I'm like, this is kind of crap. Like, I don't, like, there's no way she can be on so lockstep. They're like a trained dog now. I'm like, I don't remember that ever being the case.
Yeah, you know, even in the books, one thing that's pretty consistent is what is known about dragons is mostly unknown. Dragons will bind with a rider and whatever sort of that means, and how they do it, they don't really know. So they think it may help to have Valyrian blood, which is really like Targaryen blood.
Okay.
But that's not always the case. So there are historical examples of, you know, non-Targaryens, non-Valyrian blood being able to become a rider. There's also mentions of the dragons sort of this bond between the rider and the dragon, like them being able to sense one another. So when they're in danger, they might have sort of some link.
That makes sense.
A telepathic link where they can kind of communicate that way. But mostly, like, it's a lot of, like, no one really knows, like, how it works. Everything is passed down through, like, stories of old stories. It's something that I was okay with, sort of her mastering them, so to speak, and them coming around. But it's a good question. I think for me, I'm really going to be really interested to see, like, did Tyrion bind with any of the dragons when he let them out?
Oh, boy.
Freed them?
Yeah, get him on there flying around.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, he may need a saddle or something.
That'd be awesome. Yes. No, don't get me wrong, more anything dragon, the better on my end. But I was just like, I feel like they're kind of skipping a step here, and now all of a sudden she can do whatever she wants with them.
I do wish they just had, like, a scene that kind of explained dragons a little bit more, even if it was just them saying, like, here's some theories, but nothing's confirmed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We also – now, the second to last episode was the Battle of the Bastards, which was just amazing. Like, what a whole battle that whole thing was. Like, the way it started, the build up to it, and then all the action, and then the ending. Like, yeah, maybe it was a little cheesy that, like, you know, here comes Sansa and Littlefinger, like, bailing him out. But, like, the stuff in between, you had told me earlier in the week how you thought, what a Game of Thrones way for Jon Snow to die in, like a Black Friday stampede where he's just getting smothered.
That whole thing was
sick.
That was, I think, as an intense moment as, for me, that's taken place in the show. I think Hodor holding the door was super intense for me, but I was like, I think they might actually do it. Like, they may kill Jon Snow by, like, stampede of, you know, nameless foot soldiers.
That's
which
crazy.
In a way would have been, you know, probably very realistic. My wife and I were laughing, telling her story about how a former or a current hashtag dork host, one Opie the Poet.
Yes.
One time we were talking about if you could time travel, like, go back in time, where would you go? And he said he'd go back to medieval times and fight in a battle. And we were just like, no, like, that would be the worst thing to do. Like, it would, like, you just randomly die. Like, there's no heroic sword fighting. It's just a big mosh of people. And I think that's
the worst.
The like, probably better than any movie I've ever seen, like, depicted that and showed,
yeah,
like, this is just, like, almost random killing. Like, there were definitely formations and strategy, but when you're in the thick of it, like, you just got to get lucky.
Oh, and he was. Like, he was dodging arrows and dodging horses, yeah. And he was getting real lucky up until a point. And yeah. I don't know, I never really thought he was going to die. Like, as intense as the scene was, and you were definitely getting that, like, claustrophobic feel, or, like, you were grasping for air, I was like, they made such a big deal out of him dying. Like, that would have been, like, a Walking Dead move, I guess, or, like, to keep faking it or whatever. I was like, I feel like he's going to make it out of here. The whole first part of the season and the end of last season was like, is Jon Snow dead? I'm like, they're not going to do this again. Because, especially with him, like, they didn't kill Melisandre, so she's gone. Right. And, like, maybe, you know, actually at that point, I don't think he'd even exiled her, right? So
he
hadn't. So,
camp.
Yeah, she just brings him right back. She's like, oh, I had to do it. So, I don't know. I thought the scene was really well done. It was sweet. And, you know, the beginning of the whole thing with Rickon was, I mean, he got to kind of zigzag a little bit, no? You know, just run.
Did you see the ringer? So Bill Simmons' website has done scouting reports on characters.
No.
You should check it out. Listeners, you should check it out. They're pretty funny. And they're just like little one-page scouting reports. And Rickon's was like zero lateral quickness. Like, and it shows like an arrow. It's like, this is how he moves. This is how he should move. And like, you know, he should be moving laterally. Like, that would have been so easy to dodge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, credit to Ramsay. A good shot's a good shot. But Jesus, man. Like, especially he's given you a good amount. Like, I know you can't run super fast backwards.
Yeah.
But you got to have your head on a swivel a little bit. Right. Like, you're trying to catch that deep ball, and you can just get out of the way of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they do have to, every, especially when they keep adding characters, like, they have to clean up a bunch of characters.
Oh, yeah.
And so, this is sort of the, my kill count. And I know that this is not nearly, probably a fraction of them, but these are the ones that jump out to you. Well, first, like, early on, the Martells were killed by other Martells. Like, so they get wiped out of there. You had Asha was killed by Ramsay. She, of course, is the one that helped Bran for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Ramsay also killed his dad, killed his dad's wife? Was that? It was whatever she was, that the big fat lady. The kid. Balon Greyjoy is killed by Aeron Greyjoy, so he's down. The Three-Eyed Raven's killed. Hodor, which we had a lot more again on our previous episode.
Yeah.
You know, Hodor was a big part of this season. Obviously, that was a big storyline. I was underwhelmed a little, but Shark liked it, so there's that. Rickon Stark, obviously we just mentioned, he's dead. Ramsay finally gets his comeuppance. Now, everybody's been wanting Ramsay to die for years now. Do you think him getting beat up by Jon Snow and then eaten by his own dogs, was that good enough for you?
You know it was.
Okay.
I thought him getting eaten by the dogs was particularly brutal. Like, it looked like the dog just munched on his face. Like,
you know.
And it was like, oh, this is not a quick way to go. And it's like, you know, if a dog's going to eat you, where's it going to go? You'd think, like, maybe it goes for the throat or whatever. It just, like, goes for, like, his cheek.
It's like face. Like, oh. Yeah. Like, there's no meat there. Get out of there.
that was definitely good enough for me.
Yeah, and I think what made it all the more sweet, obviously, was Sansa got to watch it. Like, it wasn't just, like, it wasn't like she heard about it. Like, oh, Ramsay died. Like, no. She was right there at the heart of it. How about maybe the most painful death? I think it probably is. Would be 1-1, the giant.
Oh.
I know you love giants. That's tough.
1-1. So what an MVP right there. That was a tough one, poor guy. And I forget if I've name dropped this before. So he is played by a guy named Neil Singleton.
Nice.
Who I played summer league basketball with. He's 7'6".
That's amazing.
Yes, and so when I saw some little feature on him, I was like, holy shit. Like, I played basketball with that dude, and not a great basketball player, but very, very tall. he played, I think, a year at UNC and then transferred to Holy Cross after he had, like, back surgery or something like that.
Wow.
But fun little fact.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing fact. So I was going to ask you, what kind of game did he have? Was he blocking a lot of shots by default, or was he just sort of taking up space?
He got, like, it was so tall, like, he couldn't help but not, to look at him, like, the whole time he was on the court. Like, the other team's center was, like, 6'7", 6'8", and
yeah.
he was a foot taller. Like,
oh, my God.
It was kind of ridiculous. The other thing is, and then I'll stop talking about him.
Could he score?
He could score okay. Like, he was so tall. Like, everything he took was pretty much a good shot. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't get mad at him, but I remember him telling me, like, kick it into me, I'll kick it back out, and he'll shoot the three. And, you know, I'd kick it into him and never got kicked out once.
That's great. What an asshole. Like, thanks, 1-1.
That's when I was like, yeah, screw you, 1-1.
Yeah, you know what, 1-1, not happening. I'm not kicking it down. I'd never get it kicked back out. The black hole. 1-1, the black hole. What a prick.
I couldn't really be mad at him.
No, not at all. If I was 7'6", I probably wouldn't. I mean, I'm 5'11", and I don't pass, so I wouldn't. If I'm 7'6", I'm not passing. Now, are we led to believe that he is the last Giant? Because I know when we were sort of watching this, there's probably more in the books about it, but you're like, oh, they're definitely a dying race, but he's the only one we've seen, right?
Yes, and so he is the last one.
Son of a bitch.
I think I'm like 95% sure of that. Or at least the last one you know about or led to know about.
Yeah.
So maybe there's still some more on the other side of the wall, but he's the last one. So that stings. That really stings.
That does sting. So he's dead. Marjorie died. That was a tough one for me. I thought they were gonna find another thing for her to do because I was like, that maybe surprised me more than any other death in the sense that I thought she was sort of using those religious fanatics, and she was doing what she thought was best for her, knowing that she was, like, you know, married to a Lannister, mm-hmm. and I thought she was, you know, smart like a fox type of thing. And then she even saw it coming too. Like, you know, she was like, "We got to get out of here." And then she got locked in and died. So that surprised the hell out of me because I wanted to see where she was going to go in the final seasons.
Yeah. Likewise, I thought she was going to, like, find a doorway to run into or sneak out. And nope. So goodbye, Marjorie. Goodbye, High Sparrow. That was another one.
Yes.
Like, they never really tell you what was his end game. What was he really after? So that's one.
Good point.
That was one of my lingering questions.
Yeah, good point. And then we already mentioned, and then obviously Marjorie's brother, Loras, he has to get his head carved in, and then he dies. Like, that's brutal.
Yeah, that stinks.
Tommen, obviously, we already talked about him, but not a ton of suicides. Like, as bad as the world is, there's not a ton of suicides, and he's just like, that's it for me. And he's just like, and then Walder Frey. That was great stuff. Arya chalks up another kill for her.
Very satisfying.
Any other deaths that I'm missing? Obviously there was a ton, but like, as far as the main characters,
I think those are the big ones.
So who would you say? I mean, obviously Ramsay's probably the biggest as far as the guy who had the most screen time that is now dead.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hodor was big.
That was emotional. That was a big one. I think Marjorie and the High Sparrow, the other.
Definitely.
Big pieces on the chessboard.
And another king down. Like, the kings are dropping like flies here on the show. Pretty wild stuff. What about any of the potential theories that are out there? Anything else you're cooking up here, Shark, that you've either read or you've come up with on your own? I think we talked about how the Jon Snow's origin, that's becoming pretty clear. Dany potentially going mad like her father. The one thing though is she won't be able to use that wildfire, like, that's already gone.
Yeah.
So she's gonna have to have a different plan. But anything else or any other characters? Like, we haven't talked a lot about Brienne or anybody else.
And I was just really pissed off about and annoyed with Sam. And I have to give an assist and give credit to a theory by my wife. Because I was like, why would he take the sword? Like, you're not going to do anything with it, blah, 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 blah. And so my wife said, well, he's going to take it to the Citadel and figure out how to make Valyrian steel. And that's why he took it. And
smart.
I was like, you know what? Damn, that's good.
that
almost made it worth it. So I was like, why else would he, like, why would they waste time sending him home? And I was just sort of so annoyed with Sam.
Yeah.
I find Sam kind of annoying in the books, too, so I think I have maybe less patience with him than maybe just viewers of the show would. So that was one theory that I really liked, so good one there.
That is good.
Funny. just to the wife.
That is good.
I think just in terms of my big questions are, who's going to be on the throne at the end? I really liked Littlefinger saying, like, that's my goal, is to sit on the Iron Throne. And really liked that. I don't think he's going to get there.
No.
Like I said, I think it's probably going to be Tyrion after Dany, like, goes mad, like, or it turns out she's a bad ruler.
Interesting.
Or it'll just be Dany's a bad ruler, and, like, that's the way the world is and will always be, is, like, whoever's in charge.
I like that. I think that'd be a satisfied ending. Like, it can't be a happy ending. Like, that'd be insane.
No. And then my crackpot theory that I would give it, like, a 5% chance on, which is probably more than it deserves, is there's a couple references throughout the show of people saying, like, oh, we're really just, like, the world is really just in the eye of a blue-eyed giant named Magumba or something like that. It comes up, like, two or three times.
Oh, yeah, you're
and
right.
I kind of think the end of Men in Black, where it, like, kind of zooms out, and it's, like, really our universe is, like, in the marble of some giant being. Who knows?
God damn it. Like, can you imagine that?
Part of me thinks, like, it may go there. I don't think it will, but that would make me happy if it did. I'm like, oh,
Or they're just going to go out to dinner as a family at a restaurant, and the scene's going to fade to black.
Yeah.
Do you think that so as we start to wrap things up here and also look ahead to season 7, how many characters right now do you think actually want to be king or queen of Westeros?
Mm. So definitely Littlefinger.
Yep.
Definitely Daenerys.
Right.
You have Euron Greyjoy.
Oh, yeah, right.
The Ironborn. Can't forget about him.
Yep, count him.
The Tyrells are out. I mean, they're basically off the board. And, sort of Lady Tyrell, she's just about revenge. So obviously Cersei.
Yeah.
But she's kind of the last Lannister. Jaime doesn't want it. I don't think Tyrion does.
No.
I think if it's a happy ending, I think Tyrion ends up.
Yeah.
On the throne, and I think if it goes the other way, I think it's going to be Daenerys starts losing her marbles.
So I think what needs to happen, I mean, yeah, because I think that's crazy. Like, out of all these people, like, there's only four that I think really even want it.
Yeah.
So what would have to happen, and then one of the other unspoken things right now is, like, oh, like, Daenerys, like, her whole crew, they're just going to, like, work together. And you're like, well, let's see. Because, like, she even says to the Greyjoys, which they give up very easily. She's like, no more, like, raping and pillaging. And she's like, but that's what we do. And she's like, not anymore. And she's like, okay. I was like, Jesus Christ.
I think that's going to be a tough sell to her people. I mean, maybe not, but I would think it would be.
Because you would think that Dany's crew could merge with Jon Snow's crew. Like, I don't think Littlefinger would be on board with that, but, like, everybody outside of that. And then the idea would, like, all of them working together. I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be what you have to do.
I agree. I think, you know, Littlefinger, his thing is just, like, creating chaos. So, like, you never know what he's going to do. Like, he'll kill someone just to, like, stir the pot.
Right.
And so he may be as big a threat as anyone.
Yeah, good point. Do you think we see Jaqen H'ghar again?
You know, that's a tough one.
I feel like that whole thing is sort of odd, like, his relationship with her. Like, did he really want her to get killed? And then, like, he had her right in front of her, and he, like, caught her again, and then now she's on the move. Like, he clearly could have killed her if he wanted to.
Yeah, and so, like, with Arya, you know, using the face, like, it seems like she must have gotten that face from somewhere. Like, did she learn how to, like, do that? Maybe she did, but it seems like she probably has the blessing of Jaqen H'ghar.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, interesting. All right, man. I think that's a lot. There's a lot going on. We'll definitely be back for a full season 7 preview. But I think this was pretty good. It was good to get to break this thing down a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I thought this was a great season. Like, there's just a ton of wild moments. It's gonna be really hard to wait until next season.
I thought that. Episodes 1 through 4 were all great. Like, 1 was just more of a, hey, here's what happened last season, here's where everybody is.
Yeah.
And then I thought 2, 3, and 4 were really good. I happen not to be a huge Hodor fan, but I know a lot of people, not the character, but, like, the ending. I thought that could have been a little bit better or more meaningful.
Yeah.
But then I thought there was, like, a bit of a lull. Like, I always like it, but I thought there was a bit of a lull until the final 2 episodes, and then 9 and 10 were just tremendous.
Yeah, Yeah,
so.
I'd agree. One thing that is kind of interesting is, like, it's normally after the season finale, like, you feel like you've kind of been punched in the stomach.
Yeah.
Like, or, like, there's usually some, and there wasn't really that moment. Like, there, I guess the step blowing up, you're kind of like, whoa.
Yeah.
But things are also coming together, which usually things are coming apart at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Or that's what I usually feel like. So it's just different. It's a weird feeling.
It for sure is. So that's going to do it for our – so make sure you guys tweet us at Dork Podcast and email dorkpodcast@gmail.com. I share those with all the co-hosts as well. So if you have any theories or any thoughts, or were we completely wrong about something, did you agree with us, whatever, about Game of Thrones, let us know.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so real quick, Shark, let's just do a pick of the podcast. You don't have to dive into many details, but just so we can put a bow on the show. Do you got anything to recommend?
Yes. For all you older dorks out there, check out Nerf guns. I was in the toy aisle, of Target the other day. Nerf guns are legit now.
Check out Nerf guns. I'm already sold. I'm in.
Yeah, the options are endless. It's amazing.
Wow.
The world that we live in.
I did see that there was like an astronaut or like some crazy smart scientist made like the world's biggest Nerf gun.
I did see that.
That thing was enormous. I'm like, yeah, that son of a bitch. That looks pretty good. I have a couple of just real quick pick of the podcast. Yeah. One is just more reaffirming one that Davey had several episodes ago. A graphic novel called The Boys. It's written by Garth Ennis, the guy who did Preacher and like a run on The Punisher and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's sick. It's like a group that basically their job is to keep superheroes in check. Like there's a world of superheroes, but they're not all as great as they seem. And so these guys are just like badasses. It's like four guys and a girl. And so I'm only through like the first volume, but it's awesome. It's called The Boys. And then the other thing is I started to read – these have been out for a while, but going back to Overwatch, the video game, they have some movies on YouTube that we talked about before, like sort of more character development. They also have, I think it's 7 digital comics that if you go to their website, it's free. And so you get a little bit more background on all the characters. I would recommend those as well.
Very nice.
That's going to do it for us. It's a double dork week coming up on Thursday. Speaking of – this is really dork, Shark. We got – Opie the Poet's going to stop by, and we're going to talk about Firefly and Serenity.
That's hardcore dork. I love it. I'm a huge fan of both.
Couldn't be more dorky, so we're going to have that coming up. And then also Shark is going to join us, I believe, for next week. You, me, and JD are going to do season 1 of The Wire, so I'm excited to talk about that.
Yes.
And, again, you can follow us on Twitter and the email and all that stuff, iTunes, subscribe, rate, comment, all that stuff on the on the iTunes, Google Play. If you like to Google Play, we'll Google Play with you. So it's all good. That's going to do it for a very exciting edition of Hashtag Dork.